Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
A very happy Thanksgiving afternoon, everybody. It's 1:34 on WGN. And we got a great show for you today. You know, up until now, we've been having the cheese platter. We've been having maybe some bacon-wrapped Brussels sprouts. Basically, what I'm saying is up until now, it's been the appetizer to the show. Max Armstrong, I don't know if this is flattering or not, but you're our turkey today. How you doing, my friend?
Hey, thanks, pal. Guess what? You wouldn't be the first one to say that.
It's so great to chat with you. And thank you so much for giving us some of your Thanksgiving afternoon, Max. I know you didn't have to, and I really appreciate your time today.
Well, you know what? This may shock you, but as a younger man, I spent a few Thanksgiving noon hours on WGN Radio.
Oh, I'm sure.
And yeah, really, I've always enjoyed it, being a part of the station, as you know that.
Yeah, for sure. And we appreciate you having here today. And, you know, what I wanted to do today was just kind of appreciate where some of the great food that we're going to have today, where it comes from. I think there is something, broadly speaking, Max, about if you know where it was, where it came from geographically, perhaps, or what a certain vegetable or product means to a region, and you appreciate it more. I do think it means a little bit more, and it helps connect the dots between our great farmers and those of us who really don't know much about that industry.
Your point is a good one. And I think while we tend to think about all food companies being large, massive conglomerates, in reality, many of these foods are grown by family farming producers. Now, they may grow it for a larger cooperative. You know, a perfect example would be cranberries.
Mm-hmm.
Ocean Spray is one of the largest cooperatives in the country, but that means it's owned by the farmers who produce the cranberries.
I didn't know Ocean Spray was a cooperative.
Yeah, so is Welch's, so is Sunkist, so is the Associated Press, by the way. A lot of people don't realize all of these are cooperative businesses.
And where do our cranberries come from primarily, since we started there?
Nobody is even close to Wisconsin. I believe I saw a figure a couple of weeks ago. They're producing about 4 million barrels of cranberries, and most of those would have been harvested back in late September, early October. But if you pinpoint it in Wisconsin, you'd go up into, there's a little town called Warrens, W-A-R-R-E-N-S. That's the epicenter of cranberry production. It sits between La Crosse and Stevens Point up in that northwest part, north central part of the state of Wisconsin.
Is there a certain agricultural setup that works really well for that area? What are cranberries looking for? I picture these big wet bogs, but I don't know if that's just because of the commercials I've seen.
No, you're exactly right. That's exactly what they need. It's a swampy, boggy area. And interestingly enough, second in cranberry production, a very distant second behind Wisconsin, is Massachusetts. And then I think New Jersey is one of the major cranberry states, or at least it was at one time. So you know, there's nobody even really close to Wisconsin when you look at it. And we think of cranberry relish, I think, for the holidays. But in reality, much of that over the past 20 to 30 years, much of the cranberries have been processed into juice.
Yeah, exactly. That's cool. All right. I now know a lot more about cranberries than I did 5 minutes ago. We actually had a caller call in the last hour because I had mentioned that we would be chatting, and they mentioned that the Pacific Northwest, maybe Oregon, used to do more, but they had a big, I don't know what she said, a virus or something, you know, a big bad harvest for a couple of years. I don't know if you know of any truth to that, because that's what I pictured. I thought that was all Oregon and Washington.
There is still some production in Oregon. I'm not sure about Washington. But again, they are down the list. I mean, it's a distant second or third behind Wisconsin. They would be one of the top five in Oregon, I believe.
Well, shout out to Wisconsin. Nice work. Okay. Yeah. Let's talk about our green bean casserole. This is something I pass up every single... Here's my thing. I like to focus on the foods that I love and consume those. Green bean casserole, I know people swear by it. I do not. Where do you stand on green bean casserole, and where's it coming from?
I have to look at the available stomach space when I'm dining. So I
You got to prioritize.
And of course, if I'm somewhere where I'm not sure who prepared it, I look at it a little differently, too. I go back to when I was a kid, you know, where we boys would be down to the church basement. We'd be looking at everything laid out for the big buffet, and we'd say, hey, did Maud bring that? You know, she's got a cat in her kitchen. You know, so I'm looking at the available space I have to fill. But, green bean casserole, many of the green beans, in fact, come right out of the Midwest for the canning industry. You'll find some harvested certainly in Wisconsin again, some in Minnesota. There's quite a bit of vegetable production for the canning industry, and that's where these would be sourced right out of the Midwest again. California would be on the list as well for the production of green beans. And that I think those would be the top producing states.
All right. What about Brussels sprouts? It's one of those items as a kid we didn't love, you know, it had a negative connotation to it, right? A stigma of Brussels sprouts. Once I started roasting them and cooking them the right way, or maybe wrapping them in bacon, I guess that's a way to make anything good. I'm curious about Brussels sprouts. Where do those things come from?
I think one of the biggest sources would be California, and that's top of mind for me because about 10 years ago, I was on a Brussels sprout farm right along the California coast. I mean, it was beautiful landscape, and as we walked through his fields and went along on his harvester, I walked over to the edge of the field. It was a cliff right down to the Pacific Ocean, beautiful setting for producing Brussels sprouts. I'm sure some of them are sourced out of the Midwest also, but California certainly would be a key producer of them.
And Illinois here, we are proud of a lot of things, of course, agriculturally, a great agricultural state, as you've continued to fill us up in for years and years. But when we look at a pumpkin pie here in the Chicagoland area, there's a good chance that pumpkin was originally sourced from our own backyard.
Yeah, there's a big area of production right in central Illinois. If you were to go to the town of Morton, which is near Peoria, there's a big processing plant there. In fact, they have a Morton Pumpkin Fest, a festival every year because there's so much production, again, for the canning industry there. You find ornamental pumpkins produced, of course, in Illinois as well. But when it comes to the canning industry and total overall pumpkin production, nobody's even close to Illinois. It's kind of like horseradish. There's an area down near St. Louis where horseradish is produced, and no one even gets close to Illinois. It's down in that Collinsville area, as I recall. They used to have a festival there called the Root Toss to celebrate horseradish production.
Interesting. So actually, I kind of have a general question. Obviously, there's specific, like we mentioned, the cranberries. That's a kind of a specific geographic or agriculture setup you like to have that's ideal. But I imagine that for a lot of these other ones, they could go in a lot of different places. Is it just that a certain number of farms started doing it and then the processing line just happened to grow from there because, they already make pumpkins at this farm nearby. I might as well just tap into that. They're already kind of in this area. And that's kind of how an area becomes the area for something. Is it organic like that, or is it based specifically on what is best for that spot?
You know, some of it is certainly a huge part of it is climate, but maybe a processing plant was located there, perhaps to be close to labor back in the day, and it has stayed there. You do see significant shifts when a processing plant moves, for example. When one, there's been a lot of vegetable production in the past in northern Illinois. Peas, a significant amount of peas produced in Illinois at one time. I think that production has dropped significantly. Again, peas for the canning industry. And, when you have a plant that closes, that very often will shift production out of an area. We take imports, too, from other countries. So we certainly import product. Every one of these things we're talking about, we accept imports of those in some way, shape, or form. Now, we may have a very huge trade surplus in terms of dealing with these countries in these individual crops, but we do accept imports. The same is true of turkeys.
I was just going to wonder. I know that turkey, I wouldn't consider turkey agriculture, I don't think. Where do our turkeys come from, if you happen to know? I don't know if it's outside of your area of expertise.
No, our top turkey-producing states would be Minnesota and North Carolina. And again, I mean, they are way out in front of everybody else. If you take those two states and put them together, Minnesota and North Carolina, you've got one-third of the United States turkey production.
Whoa.
You add the next, I'm trying to think, who is third? Indiana, I believe, is Indiana and Missouri. If I'm not mistaken, Indiana and Missouri round out the top four. And if you take those four states, Minnesota, North Carolina, Indiana, and Missouri, I believe you have almost 50% of the turkey production of the United States.
Whoa. Wow. And it's just that's just a great place for them to be raised, and that's where it works, and that just happens to be the best setup for it, I imagine?
You know, it has less to do with climate on that than it does processing capability.
Okay.
You know, you have big processors. You know, the Butterball brand, which for decades was headquartered in Chicago, is now headquartered in North Carolina, right outside of Raleigh. And many of the Butterball turkeys are produced within about a 60-mile, 70-mile radius of Raleigh, North Carolina, between Raleigh and the coast. And then you get up in Minnesota, there's a significant amount of production up there, Jennie-O and Butterball as well, the big brands. But you have to remember, you know, that not nearly as much of our turkey production is in the whole birds, which we enjoy during the holiday season. You know, the deli market is very significant for turkey the year round now, rather than just the consumption of the whole bird during the holidays.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask, you mentioned processing. A lot of it has to do with maybe a plant that's in the area. Do most processing plants have multiple levels to them in terms of they can handle the corn in Illinois and the soybeans? Or are there usually like a plant that just does the soybeans because it's such a different product? Do you understand what I'm asking here?
Yeah, it's rare that you have a processing plant that will handle more than one product.
Okay.
You know, typically, if you've got a soybean processing facility, they're just going to be handling soybeans there. They'll be processing it into soybean meal, soybean oil. We're going to be seeing more of those, by the way, more of those soy oil facilities because of the energy demand for vegetable oil. And it's just going to skyrocket. When you've got airlines looking at using vegetable oil for the production of their aviation fuel, that is going to be a very substantial demand coming along over the next few years. We'll have a significant increase globally of soybean acreage. It'll go up some in the United States, but when you look at South America, there'll be a quantum leap to fill the energy demand, from beans. But to get back to your point, you rarely see the actual processing. Now, grain elevators take in, you know, the input from farmers. They take in the soybeans from a farmer, and they'll take in the corn in that same elevator, but then it gets channeled out for further processing to individual plants.
Okay. And you kind of answered there, and I know every time I say I have a dumb question, I'll get a text or say there's no such thing as dumb questions. I know that, so I'm not going to say that, and you're always so kind to walk us through it. But when the farmer harvests whatever crop they have, and they put it, I imagine, in these silos, is it the processing plant that comes and gets it for them, or did you have to call another company that all they do is haul it from the farm to the processing center, or is the farmer responsible themselves for finding a way to get it to the processing plant?
The farmer has his or her own trucks, and in our part of the country, that's the way it works.
Whoa.
Now, they may, in a few instances, rely on somebody else to truck for them, but 90% of our growers have their own trucks that they use. Now, some actually, for some alternative income, might be hauling something else in the off-season. I know some folks, who in addition to using their trucks to haul grain to market, might be using them to do some kind of another haul. Potatoes, for example. By the way, there's another crop that is produced in significant abundance in the state of Wisconsin.
I was just going to ask about potatoes. They got Wisconsin, too?
Yeah. I think they are in the top three potato-producing states, if I'm not mistaken. Now, nobody's close to Idaho.
Right.
They are way out in front. But I believe that Wisconsin is certainly in the top five, maybe even the top three, for potato production.
All right.
Now, I think some of that is for, a big part of that might be for chipping potatoes, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, those are my favorite. That's my favorite way to consume a potato, Max. I mentioned sweet potatoes are just a different. Is breed the right word? I'm sorry, variant. I don't know, Max. You're seeing where I'm dealing with here. Sweet potatoes. They're a different kind of potato. Are those from a specific spot?
Well, It's funny you should ask. I spent a lot of time in North Carolina, and all around me are sweet potatoes. Number one in sweet potato production is the state of North Carolina. And I believe second is Mississippi, a distant second. But I have a friend who lives right outside of Winston-Salem, North Carolina. He completed his sweet potato harvesting, I think, about 6 weeks ago. Those all get processed. I think he sells most of his locally, but many of those move into export channels. Tens of thousands of pounds are exported to other countries. But again, that you tend to think of the Carolina coast and the beautiful production area where you go to relax and enjoy vacation. And yet not far away from there are all of these acres of corn and soybeans produced right along the coast. And then you have, not too far in, sweet potatoes and turkeys and hogs. The pork that we have predominantly comes out of the Midwest, Iowa and Illinois. Illinois is a major, you'd be surprised at how many hogs are produced within a 150-mile radius of Chicago. But number one far and away is the state of Iowa.
Okay. Oh, for hogs, yeah. Well, Max,
for pork production.
You know, after every guest, I always say I learn something new here on WGN. But, Max, every time you come on, it's like 10 or 11 things that I file away. And one day it'll make me great at Jeopardy. But if nothing else, it makes us appreciate it. I imagine this is the day where you think about all of our great – I mean, you do it every day. But especially Thanksgiving, I know inflation is hitting people hard, and I'm not trying to dismiss any of that. But we are very lucky in the United States, generally speaking, that how much of our income we spend on food is way lower than many other countries, and it's because of our great farmers here in the U.S.
You're right. In a normal year, about 11% of the family's income is spent to feed the family, and it is rare, very rare, that you see a price spike of this nature. I've been doing this 45 years. I can't recall seeing one driven this dramatically by energy. And we can talk all we want to about the middleman, the processor that takes their share, and the middleman is often demonized. People will talk about, it's that middleman taking all of the money, and the farmer's not getting much. Well, the farmer isn't getting much. In a normal year, it's a very, very small percentage of production. But you have to remember all of the steps along the way that are required because of the convenience we demand of our food. We like to have it packaged. We like to have it table ready as much as possible. Well, all of that adds to the cost. And then, of course, as you and I have spoken on so many different occasions, when you have $5 plus diesel fuel, that adds to the cost at every step in the process from the farm to your table. And that's not insignificant.
Right.
We can talk all we want to about the war in Ukraine. We can talk about drought in parts of the United States. The reality is energy and our dramatic shift in energy has driven inflation when it comes to food inflation.
Right. And that's something to keep in mind, right? You can talk about price gouging all you want. It ain't the farmers that are doing that. And oftentimes it's not even the grocery stores. That's what it has to be done.
I would argue it's not the grocery store. Yeah. All of their costs have gone up. To turn on the lights in that place, John, to pay for that truck that hauls that produce from a Jewel distribution center to all of the individual outlets, that's diesel fuel that has to be consumed all along the way until we find a way to electrify these trucks or find some other source of fuel.
Yeah, for sure. Well, Max,
is coming someday.
It is coming someday, slowly but surely. Yeah. We'll get there. Max, thanks for giving us so much time on Thanksgiving. I appreciate it, my friend.
Oh, I always enjoy visiting with you. Your questions are great, John. You always take us down an educational path, I think it is.
That's a polite way of saying you ask questions that a 10-year-old would ask. But in a good way, though. That's what a lot of people are asking the same things. They just don't want to ask it. So I'm never afraid to ask those questions, Max. Thanks for joining us.
I've noticed. Thank you. Take care, John. Happy Thanksgiving.